Good evening. This is Life Rattle, your story show, and I'm your host, Virginia Ashbery. Tonight, Life Rattle number 1325 features one short story by Janice Newton. Janice Newton was born in Halifax, the third of four children in a family of two boys, then two girls. Shortly after her birth, the family moved to Toronto. Then there were many moves between Toronto, London, Cleveland, and then back to London, where Newton completed her high school. Janice Newton did 3 years of undergraduate studies at McMaster, then moved to Dalhousie for her final year. She completed her MA and PhD at York University, then went on to work as an associate professor of political science and women's studies at York University. All I want to say is, the story you'll be hearing tonight is a brilliant example of exactly how you care for a friend who is dying. So let's listen now as Janice Newton reads her story in pencil, lightly. And you're listening to Life Rattle, produced from Toronto, Ontario, Canada. And remember, Life Rattle stories often contain situations and language that some listeners may find difficult or offensive. So listener discretion is advised.
In Pencil Lightly by Janice Newton. The phone startles me awake. The clock radio says it's 8 a.m. It's Sunday morning. What asshole calls at 8 in the morning on a Sunday? Groggy, I reach for the phone on a bookshelf across the bed. This is Joanne from TGH. Takes me a while to register who she is. Joanne is the nurse from the hospital. I gave Mimi some medication and she's breathing easier. I also gave her a bath and she is resting comfortably, but she is very weak, so you might want to come down. Is she okay? Yes, she's resting comfortably and her breathing is less labored. Okay, I'll be there as soon as possible. I hang up the phone, relieved to hear that Mimi is breathing easier. When I saw Mimi on Friday night, she struggled to breathe. She tossed her head from side to side and gasped and cried, "I don't know what to do." In her 8 years of illness, I had never seen her so distressed. We talked for a while. I asked Mimi if she thought this was the time to go to a palliative unit where they could make her more comfortable. She looked at me, horrified. "No, it's just that I have developed pneumonia and I have to cough up a sputum sample so they can culture it. I just need the right antibiotic." Mimi said this with halting gasps between words. She tried to cough. She gave up and lay back on her pillow, her mouth open. I stayed with Mimi for the evening and chatted and tried to take her mind off breathing. I talked while Mimi rested. When I left, I spoke with the nurse. The nurse, Joanne, was new to me. I had not seen her on the floor before. I explained that Mimi's sister, Pamela, was out of town for the weekend. Could she please call me if things took a turn for the worse? Initially, Joanne looked skeptical. "Are you family?" Here we go again, I thought. How do you explain the incredible bond of 30 years of being best friends, soulmates, so close you could read each other's thoughts? I steeled myself and patiently told Joanne that Mimi had no other family in the city that weekend, that I was Mimi's best friend and would like to be notified. In case, I would be able to reach her family. The nurse's face seemed to soften. Mimi was, after all, very ill. She had multiple myeloma, an incurable cancer of the bone marrow. When I gave the nurse my number, she reluctantly wrote it on the chart. Not in pen, not in the next of kin slot, but in pencil, lightly, on the top edge of the chart. I felt some relief as I walked away. At least she did that. Saturday, around 5, when I came by, Mimi was the same. Despite her struggle to breathe, Mimi smiled the bright smile that lit up whenever her friends walked into the room. Her eyes eagerly tracked us for stories of our day's adventures. Annie arrived and brought a toasted bagel and some apricots, but Mimi was not interested in the food. Mimi wanted us to fill her in on all that was going on. She wanted to know how everything was turning out. By the time Sharon dropped in, Mimi had stopped talking and asked Annie, Sharon, and me to carry on talking. Mimi wanted to close her eyes and just listen. So I talked about my excitement over finally getting a research leave. Annie, an obstetrician, talked about her latest delivery and how difficult it was. Sharon regaled us with tales of her daughter's travels through Africa. Finally, we, Sharon, Annie, and I, left in time to catch dinner and a play at Cannes Stage later that Saturday night. But now, as I dress early on Sunday morning, I consider what the phone call means. What do I do? Do I drive or take the subway? Parking's so expensive. I've done this a million times. This is certainly going to be an all-day event. Subway is slower, but probably the best. I should take my grading? I could get a lot done. Like the hundreds of other times I've sat with Mimi in the hospital, she'll probably sleep most of the time. Should I eat breakfast or have it here at the hospital? Better here. All they have there is junk food. I rush through breakfast, stuff my papers into my bag, and rush to the subway. The long escalator down to the platform seems to take forever. Damn, it's Sunday. The subway is slower on Sunday. I climb out of the subway at College Street. I practically run by now. I deliberate, coffee or not. They have a Starbucks at the entrance to the hospital. I wait impatiently in line. Only 3 people, but it takes forever. I get a tall, skim latte decaf. The latte's too hot to hold, so I juggle my book bag and the coffee between my hands down the long, empty corridors to the east wing of Toronto General Hospital. The elevator makes its slow ascent, stopping at several floors to let people on and off. A recorded voice announces each floor with implausible cheeriness. 13th floor! At last, 14th floor! I leave the elevator and take my shortcut to the left through the corridor. Mimi's door stands open. I walk in. I feel relief. I don't see the clutter of food on Mimi's tray. The piles of towels and medical equipment on the windowsill, or the cards and pictures taped to the walls. Mimi looks tranquil. The nurse was right. Compared to the last time I saw Mimi, she rests comfortably. Her head lies to one side, her mouth open, as usual, and her eyes half closed, looking towards the door. Her arms rest by her side. She is not struggling to breathe. Mimi sleeps. I take my usual seat at the chair near the foot of her bed. I reach out and hold Mimi's hand. Her hand feels warm and limp. I talk softly to her. "You look good," I probably said. "I'm so glad the medicine is working." I chatter on for about 10 minutes. I tell Mimi about the play last night. You would have liked it. I tell her about our dinner at Papillon. She always liked it when I talked to her about the things we did. When Mimi felt too ill to talk, she'd close her eyes and listen while I talked or read to her. A young nurse comes into the room. I've not seen this nurse before. This nurse looks timid, says nothing, then leaves. Then she returns with the nurse Joanne. Joanne whispers instructions to the timid nurse. They both leave, and the timid nurse returns with a blood pressure cuff. She slips past me and wraps the cuff onto Mimi's left arm. Mimi's arm is so skinny, the nurse has a hard time getting the cuff on. As she pumps the cuff and listens with her stethoscope, I look down at Mimi's hand. Her fingernails are blue. That can't be normal. Since December, when they wanted to move Mimi to a palliative unit, the nursing care had been everything from bad to indifferent. Blue fingers are not normal. These busy nurses just don't notice these things. The timid nurse does not respond to me. She listens with the stethoscope. I sense something is not right. I move to the other side of the bed. I hold Mimi's right hand, the arm with the tubes in it. I stroke Mimi's hair and I talk to her. My voice is cracking. The timid nurse looks up at me and shakes her head. I ask, "What do you mean?" The nurse says, "She has no blood pressure." Tightness wells in my chest. I demand, "Well, did you check her pulse? She must have a pulse." The timid nurse shakes her head once again, slowly.
That was In Pencil, Lightly, written and read by Janice Newton. And that concludes Life Rattle number 1325. Rahul Sethi reported Janice Newton reading her story. My name is Virginia Ashbury. Life Rattle returns next week with more stories. And Life Rattle is produced from Toronto and was created by Guy Allen and Arnie Ackman.